This is the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello, everybody, and welcome along to the Liverpool Echo's Blood Red podcast. We are live on our Liverpool Echo LFC Facebook channel and the Blood Red YouTube channel, answering your questions in this special Q&A edition of the show during the international break. Yes, we're giving you guys the chance to put any questions you want to our brilliant panel as ever. And today, I'm Patrick Smith, and I'm joined by Ian Doyle. Welcome along, Doyle. Looking forward to answering some more questions.
I'm also intrigued, as you just said, today you're Patrick Smith. What are you on other days?
Well, I've got many, many names, Doyle, that I can't reveal on this podcast. And we've also got Theo Squires. Theo, welcome along, live from Echo Towers, I see.
I think
the Echo Wi-Fi is being as reliable as ever there. We'll come to Rich next. Rich, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, mate. I've got a new theory as to why Liverpool should spend £120 million on Jude Bellingham, after all, that I'd like to bring to the table.
Well, we'll definitely get around to Jude Bellingham, because he's a very popular topic for the comments, isn't he? Well, let's get stuck straight into it then, shall we? Doyle, we'll start with you then. We've got a comment from YouTube from a Mr. Toby Lerone. I think that's a joke name, because his pictures of a Toby Lerone, a very creative name from him there. His question is, how detrimental will not qualifying for the Champions League be on Liverpool's aspirations to strengthen this summer? In relation to quality of player and money to spend, it seems much too reactionary to think players are going to see one bad season after five amazing ones and Liverpool lose its appeal. What's your take on that, Doyle?
I will give you two clubs, Manchester United, the Old Trafford side, and Chelsea, the Stamford Bridge outfits. Now, Chelsea are not going to qualify for the Champions League this year, almost certainly, unless they actually go out and win it, which does seem unlikely given the calibre of the other teams that they're about to face, certainly with the draw to the final. Now, that hasn't stopped them persuading players, even if they've spent an awful lot of money, but they've managed to persuade some top players to join them since January onwards, when it's looked like they're not going to go to the Champions League. I'll also give you Manchester United. They signed quite a lot of players last summer under the new manager. They were not in the Champions League. And since then, they're almost certainly going to be in the Champions League next year. They won the League Cup. They'll probably win the Europa League. And reality is they've got a very good chance of winning the FA Cup as well. So they'll complete a cup treble that Liverpool had in 2001. It'll be interesting to see whether their fans regard it as not a real treble, like their fans did in 2001. We'll soon see about that. But what that's an example of is two teams who weren't guaranteed Champions League football, one of them who didn't even have it, still managing to attract big names. Now, everybody listening to this will go, yes, Mr. Doyle, but they both spent trillions of pounds. And the fact of the matter is they did. Chelsea obviously did it by giving players 29-year contracts or whatever it was. I think it was 8 years actually for a couple of players. So they kind of navigated their way around certain restrictions. And Liverpool's restriction is obviously the amount of money they've got to spend, which comes back to the other part of that question from Mr. Toby Lerone.
Mr. Toby Lerone.
Toby Lerone, yeah. He could have become Milk Eway or any other kind of variation on that. I'm sure Theo and Rich can have a think about that while I'm continuing this answer. I've also forgotten what the second part of it was. What was it? I've been put off now.
So do you think that Liverpool, will it affect the amount of money they got to spend?
The amount of money they got to spend, well, that will impact it because they will get a more budget by being in the Champions League. And that's unfortunately a reality. Now, what we don't know is whether Liverpool will have any outside investment before then. Fenway Sports Group, speaking to, John Henry spoke to Dave Powell from Echo Towers, our brother in arm. He spoke to him the other week. And it was an interesting little quote where he said that we've identified potential sources of investment. Now, I almost think not enough has been made of that, because what that's basically saying is, yeah, we've got some people now lined up. We just have to decide which one we should be looking at. And I think that's something that could be sorted before the summer, but we don't know for sure. So there's a lot of variables at play. So the answer to the question, Champions League qualification is going to impact them, but probably not in terms of attracting players, because as has been said, one bad season in five isn't going to make that much difference, or at least it shouldn't. And Klopp said that himself. He said, look, if players don't want to come here because they're not guaranteed Champions League football, don't want them here, because most clubs are not guaranteed Champions League football anyway. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure, Arsenal last year, they haven't been in for a few years. Now they've got a very good chance of winning the league, which, as I've said, many a time they should disband now if they don't win the Premier League now, but they'll certainly be in the Champions League next year. So that shows you how quickly things can change positively. And again, Arsenal, they're another team. They managed to attract good players and got a good... So it further underlines that, yeah, Champions League is great and gives you more money. Probably gives you more chance of attracting a certain level, a certain type of player, I should say. But it shouldn't stop you as a leading club with already good players and a great manager from signing other good players. And, you know, we'll get on to Jude Bellingham in a bit. He's, what, 19? He's got loads of time left in his career. And if he knows that he's somebody who can make a difference, can take Liverpool back to the level they were at the last few years, I should say, then I don't think Liverpool being the top four is going to affect him too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's the thing there, the combination of being one of the world's biggest clubs and having one of the best managers in the world. You're always going to have the pull, no matter what, aren't they? Theo, welcome along. You now join us. I think the Wi-Fi is up and working, isn't it, in Echo Towers. Firstly, how are you doing? And then secondly, is... are you still struggling, Theo? We'll come to you anyway. I mean, just on Doyle's point there, people will counteract that by saying, oh, well, you know, if Liverpool say they don't have as much money from not being in the Champions League this year, do they not have that budget left over from the years they've not spent over the past, you know, couple of transfer windows? Because it's not been as big a spend as some fans would like, has it been?
I only caught half of that. I might have to rejoin.
Okay, well, we'll come to Rich on that one.
I'll jump in there and say that, that is something that is a consideration. But there's also the kind of two things. One, the coronavirus pandemic, which affected all clubs. Well, the second thing is, Liverpool may well have just been saving for this summer already, you know, because they didn't sign Tchouaméni last year, did they? Which they would obviously have the funds for. They decided not to sign any other midfielder. They signed Darwin Nunes, but they were going to have to sign a forward anyway because Mane was leaving. So I personally think that there probably is the funds there to facilitate certainly at least one big midfield signing. Possibly they'll need more than one. It'll just be interesting to see how much they actually have. And whether or not the players that they want actually want to come.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really difficult one. It's already a pretty difficult situation trying to convince Jude Bellingham now, but if they're not in the top four, it could be a very, very tricky one. Rich, we'll come to you next then. We've got a question here from Matthew Fullard. We'll stay with that top four topic. Matthew Fullard from our Facebook. Top four chances. Do you think Liverpool need to take 3 points from each game against Man City, and he's put Spurs, I presume he means Chelsea, and Arsenal to have any chance? One draw against any, and we're playing Thursday night football at best. Now, do you agree with that one, or do you think he's being a bit reactionary there?
No, I don't think he's being reactionary. Actually, we had this the other week, didn't we? And I basically work on the theory that you need to be averaging 2 points a game to qualify for Champions League football. So, what does that leave us? So, they need to win at least two of them, and they could lose one. So I've done some quick maths, and that is 6 points. Okay, so as long as they win two of those games, it doesn't matter if they lose another. And, down to Jurgen Klopp, whether he looks at that the same way as I do, but that may mean that he can afford to be a bit more adventurous in certain matches, depending on how he chooses to approach them. But if they can win at least two of them, I think that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, Theo, what's your take on that? Do you think, you know, Liverpool need to be unbeaten for the remainder of the season to get in the top four? Or do you think the teams around them will slip up as well?
It would certainly help if they're unbeaten, wouldn't it? That would pretty much grab it in the bag. It's a difficult one to assess because this season's been a bit crazy with the World Cup falling in the middle. And you can go from thrashing United 7-0 one week to losing 1-0 to Bournemouth the next. And I think we saw the Premier League fixtures last week when Liverpool weren't playing, how... like Wolves getting battered 4-2, was it at home to Leeds, having dismantled Liverpool and Spurs in the weeks before. It's just such an inconsistent season. There's no constant sides of getting these points. You can't really rely on everything. Liverpool just need to go about the business and get as many points as they can, hope it's enough come the end of the season. It's also a situation where you've probably got more faith in them into this massive week of fixtures, playing against City, Chelsea and Arsenal, because this season they've been better against those big six sides. It's then when they follow them up against the Bournemouth, the Forest, the Leeds, where they've fallen apart. Like Liverpool could take 7 points from those three games and then go and lose to, is it Leeds and Forest in the next two?
Yeah.
They might have another relegation side in there before they play Spurs. They just need to find a bit of consistency and reach that level. I know I think Doyle did a piece earlier in the week where comparing it to 2020-21 where they're unbeaten from the final 10 games of the season. They won 8, drew 2. That's the sort of level that puts it in their own hands. Like, looking at the sides in the mix at the moment, say like Brighton, for example, they're going to get distracted being in the FA Cup semi-finals. You'd imagine Brentford won't have the depth to go all the way, and it will come down to the big 6-7 sides with Newcastle in there as well, with Chelsea maybe a little bit too far away. But you're still relying on Liverpool to get back to the standards that they've shown in the past, where they can go on those consistent runs of form. And every time when we thought they've turned a corner in the past, there's been right back at bottom the next week with a disappointing defeat. These three games, it's huge. They need to get the points, and then they need to go on this sort of run. But then they need to follow it up with those sorts of performances against the lesser sides as well.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I think the thing is, you know, there are obviously so many more problems in 2021 when they finished third place, didn't they? Not even fourth. But I think it's a similar challenge this time of a different level with the, you know, the calibre of opposition they've got to face immediately after the break. But we've seen them do it so many times before, haven't we? It really wouldn't be that much of a surprise to see them do it again, as you mentioned there, Theo. And hopefully they can get a little run going there. Dolly, just to round off our top four conversations, then we've got a pretty relatively easy question, I think, to answer for you from PYoung97. Said, is it true that Man United can knock Liverpool out of the Champions League even if they finish fourth?
Is what chocolate's he named after, by the way? I can't quite work it out. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's true, but it's not going to happen, let's be honest. United are going to finish in the top three. United would have to finish outside the top four and win the Europa League, and I think they will win the Europa League, and they won't finish outside the top four. Then Liverpool would have to finish fourth. So yeah, if United are dropping out of the top four, I think there's a very good chance Liverpool could be finishing third at that rate if things have gone that wrong. So yeah, it's a possibility, but then so is my hair growing back, and that's not right.
That was a very easy question, Dill. I'll give you another one then that maybe you can elaborate on a bit further from WJDowd98 on our YouTube channel again. We've seen Liverpool using the 4-2-3-1 or the 4-4-2 at times of late against Bournemouth and Real Madrid. Is there a case for using this for the end of the season with more attackers now available? Also, can Luis Diaz play after the international break?
Well, he can play. Whether or not he will, I don't know. Depends how fit he is. He will be at some point. I think Liverpool are hoping that he'll play in the... hoping he'll start full training on Monday. I think it is when they come back. Certainly come back at the start of next week. While the players are not involved in international football, he is one of them. In terms of the formation, don't think it's got anything to do with the attackers. I think it's to do with what midfielders are available. Now, we know Bajketic is out for the season. I think everybody else is more or less... Now, Thiago's not back either. And I think they do need to get him back pretty quick. I think he's somebody that they're going to need. He was somebody who was very integral during the final weeks of that 2020-21 season. In a way, it's a little bit similar. The fact he was out for a while, he came back with a little bit of a point to prove. I think he's got less of a point to prove now. I know, again, me and Rich had a slight disagreement earlier this year about Thiago, which I think I kind of won you round in the end, didn't I, Rich, on Thiago?
I am a Thiago fan. There's a bit of a, you know, I wouldn't want things to be taken out of context.
podcast taken out of context? It would never happen.
It could happen. I don't want to fall over a Toblerone with you on it, but basically, I just think he's a great footballer and can control possession of the ball. But when you're out of possession and when you need runners, he's not your man. So if you've got a shortage of top quality midfielders, you've got a bit of a problem. And he would be in my first choice midfield with what they've got available.
So going back to the question, I think it will depend on which players are available and in form, depending on how they want to set out. I mean, I personally think the only reason he played 4-2-4 or whatever it was, 4-3-1 against Real Madrid, because no one else left to play in midfield. Milner and Fabinho, the world's slowest midfield. So, I mean, ideally, they wouldn't have done that, but they didn't have any other choice. You'd like to think that Henderson could be back. I know he didn't play for England yesterday. He's not been training properly. I mean, they do still have others, but, you know, Keita's fallen out of favour after his poor performance in the first half at Crystal Palace. Interesting that Oxlade-Chamberlain got on at Real Madrid. I wonder whether he's going to get a chance. So, I do think that there will need to be a bit of variation in tactics. There has been this season. I wrote a story earlier this week saying Liverpool have played 40 games this season and they've had 23 different attacking lineups. In 23 out of 40. Yeah.
23, really?
Thanks for reading my stuff, Pat. Yeah. yeah, it's that's also in terms of the actual personnel, not just the tactics, obviously, as well. But that's not even talking about the midfield, where there's been chopping and changing. So it's no wonder Liverpool aren't scoring the amount of goals that they have done in the past. Although, what was interesting is from my very, very thorough research of just checking who played now with his goals, Gakpo on the left, sorry, Nunes on the left, Gakpo down the middle, and Salah on the right is probably the most, I can't remember, I think that is the most profitable one. Although they scored 12 goals in 5 games together, but 6 of them came against Man United. And after that, it was Diaz on the left, Firmino down the middle, and Salah on the right. We started at the start of the season. So, you know, that Firmino, Diaz, what
I was doing the bonus as well, wasn't it? When it was like
But even allowing for that, they were still scoring more than a goal a game between themselves. So that's what you need from your forward line. So I think that obviously there's that kind of underlines the massive change that's happened up front, because they've moved away from one that was doing quite well, partly through injuries, partly through signing other players and integrating them to this other one. And still Diaz to come back, so it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. And that might prompt some kind of, it will give Liverpool some scope for changing things around, even if it isn't necessarily going 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2, whatever, but subtle changes that perhaps they've not been able to do for too long in this season.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an interesting stat, isn't it? 23 different variations in 40 matches of attacks. I mean, you know, that's crazy to me. I mean, I think it does point maybe to using the 4-4-2 for the running of the season with Diaz back. Obviously, Jota was injured for most of the season. Firmino's just come back as well. Lack of numbers in midfield. I think it, you know, may well be the way forward. I've liked it at times. Midfield's, you know, been terrible, as we've spoken about many, many times. You won't talk about that again on this podcast. But yeah, certainly an interesting one. Rich, we'll come to you next then. You mentioned Thiago, so I'll ask you a question that includes him. It comes from Chris Malta 98. What do you think about our future plans with Matip and Thiago, considering they're approaching the last year of the contract? Do you think we should sell them, give them a new contract, or there's a possibility we might lose them for free? Clearly, considering the fact that we are self-sustainable with no cash injected by the owners, it makes zero sense to lose such players without getting anything for them. What's your take on that one, Rich?
Well, let's start with Thiago, since we were already talking about him. I think what was pointed out to me in the office that, given his age and his injury record, you probably wouldn't get that much money for him, not compared to some other players in the team you could move on if you were trying to raise funds to bring in other players. So it's a tricky one, really, isn't it? But I'd have to say I'd keep him, if nothing else, because I'm not sure what will be coming in. So, and you don't want to lose good players, obviously, and he's one of the better midfielders. So although I certainly don't see him as a long-term part of Klopp 2.0, I'd certainly worth keeping him, sticking around the place for a little while longer, I think. And I suppose if you do that, the reality is he will eventually go on a free transfer, won't he? And then and that'll be that. But yeah, I would stick with him. Matip's a funny one, isn't it? Because 1 week, Kanate's Van Dijk's partner. The next week, it's Matip. The next, it's Gomez. Everyone thinks they've got the answer. It's true that you're only as good as your last game, but unfortunately, not too many of these centre-backs playing the supporting role have been able to pull too many together in a consistent run that says, yes, you are definitely Virgil van Dijk's partner. Obviously, there was money invested in Kanate. Had a few injury problems himself, but you would probably look at him and say, yeah, he's going to partner Virgil van Dijk going forward until van Dijk's run his course, which who knows how long that will be given the bad injuries sustained in the middle of his Liverpool career. So you've got a problem there with Matip. Don't forget, we've got Matip on a free anyway. So it's not like you're losing any money that you invested on him. I think you've got to be a little bit ruthless, I think, now at this point. So if another centre-back is available that Klopp thinks can improve the side and you can get him, and it's not going to interfere with budget for other areas of the pitch, then, yeah, why not go for it?
Yeah, I mean, Theo, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we saw Liverpool sell Mane when he entered the last 12 months of his contract to try and, you know, make a little bit of money off, you know, losing him. Would you be inclined to do the same with Thiago and Matip yourself? I mean, you know, do you try and cash in for whatever little you get for them with 12 months left on the contract, or do you risk it running out?
If you can cash in on Matip, I reckon they should. We've seen it for different stages of this team now. When they've got players who are aging, we'll keep Henderson and Wijnaldum go on a free. We'll keep Salah and let Mane and Firmino move on. You're keeping Van Dijk. You don't want two ageing centre-backs in there. Van Dijk's can be the elder statesman and Matip's the one you move on. He was superb last year. It was the best year of his Liverpool career. But then the injuries have come back this season and he's just not been the same player when he has played. He's looked very shaky. And it does feel right to move on if there is a suitable club option for him there. Like the club comes in, puts in a bit of money, let him go with the blessing. Realistically, you want him to be your fourth choice Liverpool centre-back as it stands, because Konate and Gomez are that much younger. You want them to be playing better than him and being in form and having that starting place. So he's the one you can look and plan for a future without. And when you're picking your strongest Liverpool team on form and fitness at the moment, he isn't in it. But Thiago, he is still in that strongest Liverpool 11. So I could see him. He'll see out his contract. He's either going to go on a free or he'll get like an extension for a year or two. Like, you know, do the sort of Henderson Milner thing where we'll get a bit more out of him, relegate him to more of a squad role where he's still got this experienced head in the squad, and then he can be phased out. But he is a quality player. We've seen what he brings to the squad on and off the pitch. He is someone who's worth keeping around. Matip less so.
I mean, just to quickly add to that, Theo, and Thiago, you know, you said quickly phase him out. Would you offer him another contract extension, or would you look to, you know, phase him out by the end of 2024?
Depends who they sign this summer. Like, if you go and sign Jude Bellingham, Mason Mount, and then one other quality option, realistically, he's not in your starting midfield, then you'd probably have to take a pay cut to get an extension, and that's what he wants to do. Like, he could easily want to go back to Spain, finish his career in his homeland. If he's just happy being part of it. Like, it's a bit different with the elder players when it's Henderson or Milner, because they've been at Liverpool for a long time. It's a club they know well, longest stints of their career by far, and they're in their home country. Thiago, there is that possibility that he'd want to go back to Spain. But then he might want to try Italy, because isn't he part Italian? He's got some rich footballing heritage in his blood, doesn't he? So you wouldn't begrudge him a move if he does want to move on. But then if he's settled in Liverpool, happy to let him get an extension and see it out. It's up to him what he wants to do, because he will have options wherever he goes, even if he has to go to, I don't know, an MLS or a Saudi Arabia or someone mental like that. He is always going to have players, clubs who want to buy him, because he is a world-class footballer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't know about Thiago's little Italian he's got in him. He's a Brazilian and Spanish, isn't he? And he's a player who's very much suited to playing in Italy, so that wouldn't be a surprise to any of us, would it? Very much suited to his game. Doyle, we'll stay with the midfield. Then we've got a question here from Mets Matu on our YouTube channel. Why still keep Artur Melo when we cannot use him? You know, Doyle, you're someone who's probably watched him the most out of anyone in the world this year from the games you've seen him playing for the 23s. Why keep Artur Melo here if he can't play for Liverpool, is the simple question.
Because he's under contract and he's on a loan, a season-long loan. Next question.
Yeah, that's straightforward.
Not a difficult one, that one.
Yeah, I'll keep giving you rubbish questions, Dolly. I'll give you a better one.
They paid £3.8 million, £3.9 million loan fee. So yeah, you may as well just keep him there and use him if you can. He was on the bench against Bournemouth because he wasn't in the Champions League squad. So could be on
you
the bench.
Point out it's the end of March. It's like, if you're going to get rid of him at some point,
he'll be gone.
You do it in January. What's the point?
Yeah.
It's probably a sale and return, that £3.5 million, isn't it? You're not getting that back if you don't use them, I suppose.
And I think even if they wanted to, I'm not sure Juve would be that
Who asked that question?
It was Mets Matu on our YouTube channel.
Hopefully he's listening. Make sure by the end he's got another question, because I feel as though he deserves another question. Another go.
Okay, go on then. Anyway, Dolly, I'll ask you a better question now then. Let's go for this one. From Michael Mabena on our YouTube again. Can Trent Alexander-Arnold play the De Bruyne role for Liverpool? Aside from wanting to keep him at right back, what is the reason not to?
I think, well, again, I think it's because they want to keep him at right back, I'll be honest.
Is another one where you can do it as a one word, can't you?
Exactly. He could play there, but Liverpool have got so many other players. You know, I mean, the way Liverpool play, they don't have that kind of player, do they? They don't play with the De Bruyne. They've got three forwards. Man City don't really have forwards as such. I mean, they've got attacking players, but they're not what you I know they've okay, apart from Haaland, but they don't tend to play Haaland and Alvarez, do they, together? Not very often, anyway, I don't think. So, yeah, I do think that. No, I think the interesting thing about Trent is when people say, why don't you try him in defensive midfield? Well, the one thing people are saying are critical, overly critical, I think, of Trent is that of his defensive nous, his positioning and stuff like that, and sensing danger. Well, why would you then put him in defensive midfield? Well, there's even more danger coming here than everywhere. So,
yeah.
At least if he's right back, it's only that side of the pitch. If you're in defensive midfield, it tends to be, it can be all over the pitch, can't it? Or certainly central areas, which is, you know, why it's such a difficult position to play in. So, I don't really see much sense in that. I know there's a lot of call of moving Trent into midfield, but probably the initial thing would be putting further down the wing. If yeah. Salah has some games where he's not playing, try that, see what happens. But then you'd really need a defensive right back behind him. We've got Joe Gomez. I mean, this is just talking hypothetical because, in my view, that's never going to happen.
No.
So, no, I think with Trent, I think people have, you know, I actually think people have, and I wrote this, there's been a massive overreaction to Trent. He's a right back. He plays in a very specific way. A right back in a team that has a specific, very specific, which is easy for you to say, way of playing. And unfortunately, this season, Liverpool have had so many players missing. They've not been able to play that way. And that's kind of not so much exposed Trent, but certainly made it more difficult for Trent to play his natural game. That's it.
I think, yeah, the thing as well with that, though, like, you know, you'd have to recruit midfielders anyway at Liverpool. If you did move Trent into midfield, you'd then have to recruit some quality right backs.
Exactly, just not yeah. Really exactly. So it's just, it's yeah. Being sensible about it. You know, it's not like Football Manager where you can just, at least a Championship Manager then, show me age. It's not like Football Manager where you can just go, oh, well, we need to sign this player and this player and this player. You know, that's not real. And I think, to be fair, I think most fans realise that as well. They're not soft. Yeah, they just absolutely. They get a bit frustrated sometimes. That's fine. Don't we all? With everything?
Yeah, we do. Especially Liverpool this season.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Rich, I saw you. Oh, God, sorry. Jump in, Rich.
No, I was just going to say, I said the other week, I'm quite, you know, curious to see how Trent would do in midfield. It's just a case of when it's a good time to be able to take a proper look at that, which I suppose isn't in the running to chasing down a Champions League spot that you've basically not occupied all season. So probably not a good time to do that. And the very fact that we haven't got a natural sort of proper right back to replace him with Calvin Ramsey injured and the other options more, probably more stopgap than like for like with Trent. So I don't know. It's one of them. Will there be an opportunity at the end of the season or pre-season to have a look at that? I'd like to see it, but the manager doesn't seem particularly infused about going down that route, does he?
No. Yeah, Klopp said himself that he's the best right back in the world. He's a world class right back. Why would you play him in midfield? I think when
Southgate played him in England, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Andorra or someone like that. So it was a completely pathetic exercise, and it was given up after 45 minutes. But it's like, if you're going to play him in midfield, Klopp's response was play him as the number six, and they didn't do that. And obviously, the shouts for him to go in midfield this year have been louder because he's not been great defensively, but neither have the centre backs next to him, the left back next to them, the holding midfielder in front of him, the two number eights in front of him, and then the front three. He's just an easy scapegoat the way he has been throughout his whole Liverpool career. But he doesn't have the trophies this year or the assists to quite defend him. We weren't having this conversation under such scrutiny when he was holding aloft the Champions League or the Premier League, and when Southgate couldn't leave him out of an England squad. It's just silly conversation. It's always been so over the top. When Liverpool get back to their best, Trent will be crucial to that. It'll be central that, but he'll still be doing it from right back.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, watching them sign a couple of midfielders and Trent will all of a sudden return to being one of the best right backs in the world, if not the best right back in the world. I'm 99% certain of that. Sorry, Rich, go on.
I'm sure Cafu probably fancied to go in midfield as well, but that never really happened, did it? So.
Well, just going back now then, Rich, I know you love Dolly's shout of champ manager. Your next question is a bit on tactics here. It's from Cheyenne C on our YouTube channel. Still relevant to fullbacks as well. Considering the fact that assists from our fullbacks have dried up as they no longer stay higher up, which is partly due to lack of legs from midfield, should we have to make some tactical tweaks to play one of the midfielders to play in an advanced eight, which will reduce the burden on the fullbacks? So basically he's asking, should we tweak the tactics midfield to help the fullbacks out? In very complicated words.
I'm very glad I didn't get asked that question.
Can I have the Toblerone question, please? Or the Alfa Milo one? Well, if I had the answer to that, and you know, if Jurgen Klopp was looking at things exactly the same way, or had the answer, Liverpool probably wouldn't be in the current predicament they are. I don't think, but it's difficult, and you've got players that play in a certain way, and he loves playing the same formation. And when he tweaks the formation, I don't think overall it's truly worked, or he's reverted back to his tried and trusted formula fairly quickly, which I can't blame him for. It's because that's worked so well for him for such a long time. Whether that sort of change would come to fruition or not, I don't know. But what it wouldn't harm was to have a bit more of a defined plan B, so that if things aren't working in one particular way, have they got the players and have they got the strategy to be able to switch things around and try something entirely different? And if that means a more advanced midfield player, then all the power to it. What I have been a little bit critical of is a lack of assists from midfield, and I called this out a bit earlier in the season, and it was pointed out to me that most of Liverpool's assists normally come from the fullbacks anyway, or created by the forwards. So why should you be overly concerned about a lack of assists from midfield? Well, if they're not coming from the other areas, then it becomes highlighted a bit more, doesn't it? And regardless of whether you change the way that you play, I'd certainly like to see midfielders chipping in with a few more assists and goals, to be fair, and just to take that burden off the players, because we've been spoilt for a long time with Trent and Robbo in those wide areas, and obviously Salah, Mane and Firmino up front. But we're in a new era now, and people probably need to chip in from all over the park, and just sort of highlights the problem they've had in midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we've spoken about how when they fix the midfield, that'll help the fullbacks out. But I mean, what exactly do they need in midfield to fix that problem? I mean, it is a good question when you break it down like that, I suppose. Theo, let's ask you one then from our Facebook, a top fan in Tony King. He says, everyone talks about buying new centre midfielders, but who would you buy to partner or replace Van Dijk? I think partner Van Dijk is probably the question there. Who should Liverpool be looking at centre half?
That's a difficult question, because it depends what they're going to do in midfield to how much kitty they have left over. Like, if we're talking to partner Van Dijk, like, the big money one that everyone talks about is Gvardiol, but he plays the left same side, doesn't he? So you're not going to have Gvardiol coming in to partner Virgil Van Dijk. You'd be as an alternative.
Van Dijk to the right hand side, and play both on their natural foot.
Van Dijk is a left sided centre back. He might be right footed, but that is his position. Like, if he's been, yeah, he'd be good enough to do it. But if that is his role, it'll just make it even more complicated, changing it up all over again. I think Klopp said in a press conference a few weeks ago, if not a couple of months ago, that it's difficult for Liverpool to know what they're going to do until they know who's moving on. Like, they could bring in four players, but they need to know who's moving on first. They need to look at the full picture before they can decide centre-back wise, and good young centre-backs out there. Like, they're being linked with Ndicka, one in Germany, is it?
Evan Ndicka, yeah, plays for Frankfurt. Yeah.
That's the one.
Out of contract in the summer.
That's the sort of player you can maybe see them going for, because it's a bit more cut price. He's a bit younger and he can sort of go in as this backup centre-back and then progress forward and get more of a starting role as he gets a bit older and Van Dijk gets a bit older. But you can't see him going and spending 100 mil or whatever it would take to get Cavadio when you want to spend that much on the midfield, if not one player in midfield, two or three players in midfield. They've got other priorities at the moment, and you'd imagine this new centre-back will be a bit further down the pecking order of priorities at the moment.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I mean, it really is an interesting one. I mean, Dawley, if you want to just round us off with your take on, you know, the centre midfield and the centre-half situation. I mean, how would you like Liverpool to spend their money in the summer? You know, do you think they should go all guns blazing for Jude Bellingham and maybe risk not getting a centre-half in? I mean, we've got a comment here saying from Frederick Lind on our YouTube channel, if extra funds was needed to get Jude, Mount and one midfield and a centre-half, would you accept a massive bid for Alisson to get there? Kelleher's been excellent. I mean, is there a case where Liverpool maybe have to sell a player they don't want to necessarily sell to bring in a midfielder and a centre-half they need?
I got asked a question on the Q&A on our website yesterday about, do you think Alisson's going to leave? Because essentially the inference was that the rubbish. And I just said, look, it'd be a massive surprise. And then it got taken out of context. And then I woke up this morning and then there was like a million different, you know, people saying, what you're talking about? It's like, well, I got asked a question. Does I'm being asked a question now? I wouldn't know. No point in cashing on Alisson. What's the point? They're more likely to sell Keller, to be honest. He probably needs to go to get some some minutes in somewhere else. Has he only played three times for Liverpool since the League Cup final when he won it? So I do think
that's it's time to move on.
Oh, sorry?
You said yesterday.
Yes, it is what I said yesterday. Correct. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I think. Funny enough, in 24 hours, I've changed my mind. Yeah. You know, so who knew that was going to happen, eh? In terms of actually signing players, going back to something that was touched on before, I think Matip will get sold. It's time for him to go. I think you'll get a little bit of money for him, but not loads. Gomez isn't going to get sold. They just gave him a new contract last year. And although he's had some ups and downs, he can play right back, which will help.
So just to jump in there, Doyle, let's say they do sell Matip and maybe, you know, Nat Phillips also probably is desperate for a move away. I mean, would you sign two centre-halves then or one?
No, just the one, because you've then got Rhys Williams and Billy Kometi, and you just give a chance to another youngster, because wasn't Nat Phillips somebody who they gave a chance to? So,
Gerald Quansah playing well as well.
Yeah, sorry? Seth Vandenberg as well. So, you know, you forgot about him, and he's somebody who's probably got more experience than all of them put together. So, yeah, there's enough there. So I don't see that being an issue. In terms of the midfield, yeah, they're going to need two, three, probably. Bellingham, you know, would they obviously want to sign him? You know, Mount's an interesting shout. That no one's knocking that one down. And then there'll be someone else. I mean, there's the lad at Wolves, Nunes. I mean, it depends on how much they're willing to go with on Bellingham and how much money they've got, because they'll know quite well. I think they're the four positions that they'll look to sign this summer, as well as possibly a reserve goalkeeper. But then, as Theo's pointed or kind of suggested, if you can pick up a young central defender for nothing, and you can also pick up possibly an experienced goalkeeper for nothing, then you're doing okay, because you're getting an awful lot off the wage bill over the, you know, in the summer with Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Firmino. You know, all the others go, and Matip would probably be one, as I've said. So I think there's enough scope for Liverpool to do something. And the interesting thing is that for most of those players we've mentioned, even if Liverpool aren't in the Champions League, it's still a step up for them. So that's the kind of player that Liverpool want. They want someone who regard Liverpool as being a step up and someone where they can challenge themselves. Going back to what was said about Thiago about 10, 15 minutes ago, he's somebody who's probably wanted to try his luck in a different league. I think he's done all right. I wouldn't sell him in the summer. Just let him run out of contract. He's somebody who's, was he 32 now? He's 32 in April, isn't he, I think? So
turning 32, yeah.
Yeah, so he's somebody who knows quite well this is probably the last big club he's going to play for. So I think that he'll be quite happy with that as well. And if you've got, people kind of forget that it's not just about the actual performance on the pitch. It's about what happens in training and being around the training pitch. If you've got someone like Thiago there, you know, and you've got youngsters coming through, they're like, there's Thiago. He's done absolutely everything. You know, fortunately, Liverpool are in a position now where they've got players like Alisson, like Trent, like Henderson, who've done that at Liverpool. But Thiago's done it elsewhere.
Yeah.
So he'll be somebody they can look up to, which is why there's certain players who left, who perhaps didn't play as much, like Lallana and thinking Lovren as well, who are big influencers around the place. And Milner's going to be one if he goes as well, because he's somebody who's got a massive influence. You speak to Harvey Elliott, he mentions Milner. You speak to Bakitic, he's someone, you know, Milner's somebody who tries to help him. You speak to the other, you know, he's in the leadership group, isn't he? He's been there for the entire time. He's been vice-captain. There's a reason why he's the vice-captain. There's a reason Jordan Henderson's the captain. Klopp's not soft. He knows what he's doing. You know, he's managed great players, and he understands the importance of the influence of these kind of people around the place, not just on the pitch. So that's something that'll be interesting going forward, because Liverpool can't just get rid of all the old players straight off, but they want to bring in the kind of newer players who've got a point to prove, and that's what they had with the likes of Mane. He wasn't particularly old. Salah, he had a point to prove coming back to the Premier League. I think they go back to Wijnaldum, Robertson, Shakira or something, they were all relegated. So it's a step up for them. And it's also, they've got something to aim for. So Bellingham would have, you know, step up for him. Sorry to Dortmund, but it is. Nunes definitely a step up. Even Mason Mount, he'd going from plastic flags to real flags. So it would be good. It would be good for us. I feel a bit bad about that one. That was a bit cheap, but you know, I'm happy with that. Happy with that.
Yeah, there's our clip for the social channel story. Absolutely love that one there at the end.
Don't do that. It's bad enough other people doing it. Don't you do it. Thank you.
Oh, Chelsea fans are angry enough as it is anyway, aren't they?
They'll be crashing the live stream.
It's people kicking a ball of air about. Let's just, come on.
Let's end the live stream before the hole gets dug any deeper, Dolly, shall we?
I can give you the spade. I'm just going to keep on going. Y'all come out the other side, you see.
Oh, well, I'm going to pull the plug on it anyway. Huge thank you, though, for joining me. As ever, Ian Doyle, an interesting and exciting Q&A as ever. Theo Squires and Rich Garnett as well joining us today. And thank as well to all of you for watching along, be it on Facebook or YouTube or listening along on podcasts. Make sure, though, to subscribe to us on the Blood Red channel, be it on your podcast format or on YouTube, because we'll bring you loads of content over the weekend from the Liverpool Legends game against Celtic. Hopefully some exclusive interviews from our very own Theo Squires. We never know. But for now, this has been the Blood Red Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you again soon.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.